On Christmas Eve, many years ago, I lay quietly in my bed. I did not rustle the sheets. I breathed slowly and silently. I was listening for a sound I was afraid I'd never hear. The ringing bells of Santa's sleigh.
Hey, this is Charlie. Welcome to the Family Starship Podcast, where we review movies, get the reactions, and you got yourself a podcast. I am, however, not your host. It will be my father coming in a minute. Let's drop right into it.
So welcome back, everyone. After an extended break, we are back with the Family Starship Podcast for a special Christmas edition this year. Based on the book by Chris Van Allsburg, The Polar Express is a 2004 animated film directed by Robert Zemeckis. The movie follows a young boy who is wavering on his belief in Santa Claus and Christmas when he embarks on an adventure aboard a magical train to the North Pole. All right, joining me today is my son, Charlie. Say hi, Charlie.
Hi, what's up?
So, unlike other podcasts we've had here on the Family Starship, this is actually a movie Charlie introduced to me. Usually we have movies that, you know, Lauren and I introduced to our kids from our childhoods, but this is actually a movie that I got introduced to because one Christmas many years ago, Charlie was really into trains, and we thought, hey, trains, Christmas, Polar Express. And without seeing the movie, we bought the DVD and we watched it. And ever since then, I think you've really liked this movie. And we watch it just about every year. So it's something that, because you were into it, I got introduced to. Why don't you share your history, what you feel about the movie in general?
I mean, yeah, I would say that I got the movie pretty long time ago. Don't actually remember getting it, but I've known I've watched it a lot, like definitely every Christmas, every year. And it's like kind of like, even though there's a lot of like things that I know are not perfect with the movie, it definitely holds a special place in my heart, and I love it for that reason.
All right, very cool. So we're going to get into everything about this movie. And to start with, we're going to start with a spoiler-free section where we talk about our overall impressions and what's the big takeaways. I'll start. Overall, I really like this movie. It has some issues that I'll get into, but it maintains my interest when I watch it, and it has some really memorable imagery. And my big takeaway is this. For me, it works mainly for the mood and atmosphere presents more than as a story narrative. It feels very dreamlike. And you know what? When I say that, there are moments in the movie, there are shots, there are like, you know, compositions. It's CGI, obviously, but that it feels, without being a part of my childhood, this is a movie I got introduced to when I was an adult. It evokes a sense of Christmas. I think, unlike any other movie I've seen, the movie takes place in one night, and the driving snow, like the night sky, it feels like a dream, but a dream of what Christmas is in dreams, not what Christmas really is, or it's always the idealized kind of version of Christmas. And for that, the movie really, really works.
You know, this movie came from an era where a lot of, like, animation, like, films, like, that came out in a mocap, like, style that was, like, popular in the early 2000s that people thought were going to be the next big thing. But most of them became, like, financial failures, like, for the most part. And this is, like, the only one that kind of, like, rose above that and kind of became something more. And you can kind of see why, because it's like unique in like in a way that no other Christmas movie is, because of like considering how like popular it was. It has like a lot of like weird dreamlike imagery that kind of evokes like a feeling that like takes you into this world and kind of makes you to like forget questioning about like what's reality and what's a dream.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we're going to get to that because I think that's one of the central questions of this movie is how do you treat its narrative? Do you treat this as something that really happened? Or is this something that kind of just happens while the main character, I mean, by the way, the main character has no name at the end of the credits. They just call him Hero Boy in the credits. So, he has no name. And I think that's intentional, in that it's supposed to be anyone. It could be anyone who watches the movie. You put yourself very much in the place of this character. And, and the movie's theme really is about belief in something and belief as a choice. And we'll talk more about that as we go. But very much so, the character goes on an adventure and starts in one place and ends in a different place as far as how he feels about Christmas. Really, what the movie drives home is that belief is really a choice and that you can choose to make something meaningful just by your choice to believe in it. And there's a lot of really nice moments that illustrate that in the movie. And with that, let's break it down with our reaction montage, and then we'll come back with the spoiler-filled section of the podcast. So I'm here with Lauren. Lauren, what did you think of The Polar Express?
It's not a movie I have any personal nostalgia for, but I love how much my kids love it, and the hot chocolate song is awesome.
All right, hot chocolate. I'm here with my son, Joel. Joel, what did you think of The Polar Express?
It's a very good movie, but the kid's kind of stupid.
Why do you think the kid is stupid?
She didn't even need the ticket right that moment. She just needed it when she got back.
Yeah, but she just left it on the table and the other kids like tried to get it to him. So it's really the other kid who tried to like get it back that lost it.
Yeah, and that's why the kid's stupid.
Okay, I gotcha. Thank you. That was Joel. Okay, let's go forward with a more detailed review at this point. Past this point, there will be spoilers for the movie, so if you haven't seen the movie yet, I recommend you watch it before you go any further in this podcast, because we will spoil everything at this point. So let's start with what worked. We touched on this, but I think this scenario is very alluring. The idea of Christmas Eve, you know, Christmas Eve is a very like, you know, magical night in that there is a sense of anticipation and a sense of uncertainty about what's going to happen the next day. It's a night where I think you have a hard time falling asleep as a kid. At least that's what I remember. I don't know if you feel the same way, Charlie.
Oh yeah, totally. But you know, sometimes like other stuff will be happening. If I like put on like an audiobook, I was like, yeah, I could do this.
Yeah, and this movie puts you in that scenario very effectively. You get a sense that this is a kid having a hard time falling asleep, thinking about what's going to happen the next day, but also kind of wondering what it all means. At a point now where a lot of the childhood innocence he had about Christmas might be wavering. And the movie does a good job of putting you into that scenario. When he gets on the Polar Express, so, all right, let's start with this scene, because this, you know, we'll talk about favorite scenes in a minute. Actually, let's start right now with best scenes, because there is a scene that I think you like a lot, Charlie, and I like a lot as well. And when the movie starts, he hears the Polar Express outside. He walks outside and he's given a choice by the conductor to get on board and go to the North Pole. And he hesitates for a moment, but then he decides to get on. And the scene where he ultimately jumps to get on the Polar Express, there's a musical cue where the music swells and he looks back and there's a snowman. The snowman had been seen before in the scene, and it's just, you know, a snowman. And, you know, as the train pulls away, like the wind created by the train moving makes the snowman appear as if he's waving goodbye. And you see that reaction that the kid has to that. And it's a, you know, there's a fascination with that. It's like at that moment, he is beginning to leave himself open to the possibility of, you know, believing in Christmas and, you know, the magic that's there. You know, it's like, you know what? Like, it could just be the wind, but the snowman looks like it's waving. So why shouldn't it be waving? At least that's the way I took that scene.
This scene for me definitely feels like that when he sees like this like big train outside his driveway that like doesn't have any railroads or anything, no way to get there. There's like a lot of implications that like probably go through his head that like convinces him it has to be a dream, and at the same time he's like concerned that they know all this about him. The curiosity and like the consideration that all of this is most likely like real, it gets to him. He agrees after just like standing there for a minute, like kind of taking in what's going on and not really understanding but wanting to know more.
Yeah, and that moment where he makes that decision, it's an important moment in the narrative. And I love the visual storytelling in this scene because there's no dialogue. I mean, of course, he has a conversation with the conductor at first. But once he makes the decision that the train starts to pull away, he jumps on the train and then he looks back and you can see his perspective start to change just by the expression on his face. And what he sees when he looks back at the snowman. I think it's a really, really effective scene and does a lot of good storytelling without any dialogue, really.
And when the train starts moving away, like, he, like thinks to himself that, like, he just, like, lost the opportunity to maybe, like, miss out on something that, like, could basically never happen again. And that like that thought didn't really come to him when the train is stopped and he has like time to think about it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, that sense of like that FOMO, the fear of missing out, you know, like how often do you get a train, like, you know, magic train stopping in front of your house and like there is a decision made there. Doesn't get on a train, the whole life is different. So it's a really, really effective moment that, like, if there was one scene that encapsulates the movie, I think that's probably the one scene. I also want to mention that a couple things. One is the visuals, that the way the movie looks, the night sky, like I said, the snow falling down, it creates a look and a mood that is pretty unique to this movie. And if you've read the book, I mean, we've read the book and, you know, it does represent the illustrations in the book really, really well. That is done very, very well by this movie. And the other thing is the score, the musical score, especially the main theme by Alan Silvestri, really contributes to that mood. It's cliche, but the music combined with the visuals is magical. There isn't much story to the movie. But what is presented, you are really there for, thanks to the mood that's created. Another part of this that really works is that when he gets on the train, he meets a bunch of kids. And Charlie, you're closer to being a kid than I am, so I don't really remember feeling this way as much as you do probably, but when you meet new kids, when you're a kid, there is a kind of shared curiosity and, you know, desire to socialize often with other kids that is unique to kids in a way, because you're, the world is more new to you. And in this scenario, when the boy gets on the train, he meets a girl, he meets a couple other kids, and there's immediate camaraderie and a shared sense of adventure among them that the movie sells very well. And that relationship is really carries the movie for the rest of the way, because you really feel that these kids act like real kids. They act like you might in this scenario.
I'd say that I, as a person who is mostly extroverted and tends to socialize with new people I meet, once too, that is, like, the kids in this movie, especially for the age, like, act how I would imagine, like, them to in a, like, a outlandish scenario such as this. And it's, and actually, even though it's so crazy, like none of them would actually act like really any different than they would in a normal like social scenario where they're first meeting each other. And they get basically judged off first impressions because it only takes place over one night. But over that one night, they kind of understand why, like, all of them are there and try to basically see what they need to improve about themselves to basically, like, get to the spirit of Christmas and, like, improve themselves for the future, which, like, all the, like, trials and tribulations that they go through helps them to achieve, and kind of gets tied up at the end of the movie, where the conductor gives them tickets with, like, one word on them that kind of sums up, like, what their character was about for the whole movie.
Yeah, no, definitely. Then they all go through an arc, you know, they all go through an arc and they all reveal their character through their actions and their interactions with the other kids. And it's done very well, I think. There's about four kids we get to know, and we'll talk more about them, but there's the hero boy, who is just the main character, whose perspective we take for the entire movie. There's the hero girl, who he meets on the train, and there's this whole adventure where she loses a ticket, and he has to get it back. And then there is Billy, who is this kid, this little kid from the wrong side of the tracks, and they even say that in the movie, oh, we're going to the other side of the tracks. And he has a very pessimistic view of Christmas, and he actually played changes more than anyone in the movie, really learning to appreciate friendship in his case. And there's one more kid, who's called the know-it-all in the credits. I don't know if you want to do this now, Charlie, but we'll talk more about him when we get to our MVP section.
You know what kind of train this is?
It's a magic train. Yes, he We'll hear more about the know-it-all kid when we get to the MVP section. He definitely has the biggest laughs in the movie, and definitely the best quotes. One more thing I want to talk about regarding the mood of this movie, and that is when they get to the North Pole. The North Pole looks different than I would ever imagine the North Pole looking in a cheery Christmas movie. And that's the thing about this movie. This is not the North Pole that you would see in a Rankin-Bass special, like in Rudolph or anything like that. This is a North Pole which looks a little industrial. It's got brick buildings. The elves are gathered to the square, but, like, the areas around the North Pole feel vast and empty. It really has a weird vibe to it. There are scenes where the kids end up in, like, the train yards of the North Pole, and they're wandering around looking for a way back, and there is this, like, low droning radio playing Christmas carols. There is lots of empty space, and, you know, this is an overused term, but it's a very liminal space. There are so many empty spaces in the North Pole. It's unlike any North Pole I've ever seen in any other movie. And I like that about it. It's, it feels like there's an eeriness to it, but you know, there's nothing, you know, it's hard to describe. It makes you feel like you're in a very different place, a different reality, than you would ever expect to see. But it does that very well.
It kind of takes the perspective of not exactly realistic, obviously, but kind of like the thought of like they have to have some sort of crazy system to pull this off every year. Yeah. And that kind of comes into play with like how industrial the place looks. Yeah. And there's just enough like elements of like dreamlike like imagery, kind of like the spiraled mountain that they like the train goes up.
Yeah.
And other stuff like the train the elves take to get to from place to place, and also the giant like balloon that like in yeah. What you call it, the balloon that like lifts like the
sack. All the presents, the sack of presents.
Yeah. Like all that. Like obviously, like you don't like immediately see this and like this is real, but like all of that kind of adds up into like something very unique to this movie.
No, I agree. Yeah, it's memorable. It feels like you've been there before. I can't place it. It feels more like a real place than these very stylized North Poles you might see in other movies. It feels like you've been there before. And I know this is we've said this a lot in this podcast already, but it feels like you were there in a dream. It really does. I don't know another way to describe it. Okay, so before we go into what didn't work, I want to say a word about the animation. This movie, Charlie, I don't know if you know this. You probably do know because you've watched a lot of YouTube videos. This movie is infamous for living in the uncanny valley. And what we mean by the uncanny valley, I'm sure most of you know this already, but for those who might not, it means when a piece of animation or, you know, something resembles a person to a very, very close degree, but there's something very odd about it that is off-putting. Like, the faces in this movie are detailed, but they don't move the way faces move and things like that. So this movie has a reputation for being a little creepy with its human animations.
Yeah, I definitely remember like hating them more than I do now. I still don't really like them actually, but like I remember despising them like absolutely like. That's like the one thing that like ticked me off about this movie. But I will say that this, like as I said earlier, this comes from an era where like they were trying a new style of animation. They said it's gonna be the future. Everything's gonna look like this. But then, like three movies came out that looked like this, and then this is like the only one that like made some sort of like profit. So it basically got abandoned, and the studio that made them got shut down. Yeah, the like as he said, the faces like move pretty unnaturally, and like some of the like elements that go into like more close up shots where you'll see the faces more often, like kind of throw you off and like make you like think about like how they look more than what's actually going on.
Right. Yeah. So here's the thing, though. I think that assessment of the animation was probably more true in 2004 and even like, you know, 10 years ago. I think animation has progressed so much at this point where these don't even look remotely realistic anymore. And now I have more of an appreciation for them. Now they look a little bit more retro and stylized. They look more like illustrations or attempts at illustrations than they do attempts at real people. I still don't love some of the animation, but I I don't mind the style anymore. It's fine. It's fine for what it is. Now, some of the design choices I don't love, and I'm looking at the elves right now. The elves are fine in big group shots and stuff, but when you get close in their faces, they look a little creepy. They don't look realistic, but they don't look charming in any way. They look kind of grotesque, if I'm going to be honest.
They kind of look like a festive, flesh gremlin, like in a kid's movie. Especially towards the end of the movie, during the climax, you'll definitely start, there'll be more, close-up shots of them, and you'll definitely notice, you're like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's my overall impression. The style kind of works now, but yeah, some of the choices I still don't like. Okay, so let's go to what didn't work. And I hesitate to put this one in here because I don't really mind this, but there is very little story to this movie. The boy doubts Santa, he gets on the Polar Express, he makes some friends, they go to the North Pole, they meet Santa, and then he believes, and that's the end. So very slight, there's adventures on the train, but you really feel that they added a lot of really, I'll say, uninspired adventures to fill out the timing of what is a very short book. So some of these are when the girl loses the ticket flies around the train, he has to get it back. It's not the most engrossing stuff. And then there's also the train gets blocked by a bunch of caribou. It feels like they're there for like 20 minutes trying to get past the caribou, even though it's like 10 seconds. The train gets derailed on ice. It all kind of feels like filler.
Yeah, I will add that the... Oh, God, voice crack. But the one that bugs me the most out of those three is definitely the first, which is like dumb decisions he makes that leads to making a problem that wasn't there in the first place.
Right. Yes.
And that basically led to like 30 minutes of trying to figure this whole problem out that could have been solved if he just did nothing. And as for the other two, I also think that the caribou scene goes on for too long, I'd say the only redeeming quality about it is that on a first watch, the Tom Hanks point on the engineer's beard, yes, is to make him communicate is pretty, right, funny.
Yes, that's true.
And then I'd actually argue that while it is pretty pointless, I'd actually really like when the train gets derailed on ice, you could argue it's kind of pointless, but I can kind of feel the intensity, and since it's not really focused, when it's focused on the train's animation, it looks really good.
It does. You're right.
And everything about it is as far as the animation goes and the mixed feelings I have about it, that's where I think it really shines the most.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that is definitely, of all the filler in the movie, that's actually the filler that's actually executed the best. And it is stuff that is kind of fun to watch. One more thing I have to mention, and that is the thing that I probably dislike the most about this movie. Get to the end, this kid has this big moment of revelation. He's gone through this transformative journey. He meets Santa. He really embraces Christmas again. And Santa takes off. And by the way, Santa taking off at the end is I am a sucker for those scenes in any movie. You put a good Santa taking off scene with good Christmas music, and I will watch it every single time, and I'll get the hairs in the back of my neck standing up. I'm a sucker for that. I'll watch that, and I like it, and it's done very well in this movie. After that great scene with Santa, elves all celebrate. We cut away to a Steven Tyler elf. Now, Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, for those of you who don't know, does a song in this movie, and I don't mind the song, but why did they make the elf look like Steven Tyler? for a movie that does very well, it does very well to present this timeless storybook atmosphere. It creates its own universe that you're happy to be a part of. To have a dumb-looking Steven Tyler Elf is very jarring. It just takes you right out of it, and it just puts you in, like, this is just a stupid corporate movie, isn't it? And, like, I don't like the idea of editing movies that are made once they're out there. I wouldn't mind just editing that scene out. Honestly, I wouldn't. It's just, that's how jarring that scene is to me.
And honestly, like, I think that kind of goes for, like, the whole, like, ending of the movie for me after, like, Santa, like, dashes off. And as soon as the Steven Tyler Elf thing goes down, and I feel like, most of all, I really don't care for, like, the very ending when he wakes up and it's Christmas again. And, like, I think it would have been more interesting if the movie just ended when he, like, went to his room to go back to sleep, because, like, I feel you can pretty much imagine what would happen afterwards, like, in your brain, and it doesn't really need to be, like, shown to you, and it's, like, I don't know, it's just, like, nothing, like, is really added that we need to know about. Obviously, he gets the bell from Santa's sleigh, but you could have kind of, like, assume that, like, Santa's a magic guy and he could probably do that.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think the movie ends at such a point where, at least the adventure in the North Pole ends at such a point where you've already told the story. You've kind of already told the story. And having that epilogue the night after, yeah, it's, this will lead us into our next question, but, like, it does kind of feel like you don't really need it. You don't need a definitive answer on whether this is a dream or not. Because the whole point of the movie is that belief is really something that you choose to do. And that's something you can decide to make something worth something if you so choose. It's not about whether something is concretely true or not. It's about, okay, if I believe in Christmas and, you know, the magic involved with Christmas, I can make it so. And that's what I think the message of the movie is. So to have a kind of definitive epilogue where, yes, he gets a concrete bell that he lost earlier, that he got from Santa, kind of like, yeah, I probably didn't need that. I mean, it's fine as it is, but I agree with you. I don't think I need that scene.
And I also, like, what really quickly wanted to add that, like, basically, the ending doesn't really fit with the message of the movie, that, like, leaving it up to interpretation kind of, like, would help the movie, like, feel more conclusive than, like showing, like, an ending scene saying, like, yup, it happened, and, like, which is weird, because you'd think that, like, a final scene showing you what happened would be more conclusive, but to me, like, it just doesn't really fit.
I hear you, and we'll talk more about that in the next section when we start asking our big questions. Okay, so I think it's about time to wrap things up, and I want to end with some questions about the movie that we have. And first of all, what's your favorite scene in the movie, Charlie?
I'd probably say that one of my favorite scenes in the movie is basically I did briefly talk about the fact that I liked how the when the train got derailed on ice, and just like the pure like cinematography and animation of it kind of carries it for me and like makes it really memorable. Yeah. And the scene where he gets on the train, and I'll mention one that hasn't been brought up yet. Yeah. That what kind of encapsulates the atmosphere of the movie, which is like when they're their train gets loose while they're like trying to get Billy off of it, and like it goes to like dark tunnels, and then they start exploring like where the elves live.
Yeah.
and like
I love that too.
Since like all the elves are gathered to see Santa on Christmas Eve, no one's there.
Yeah.
And like if and as like he said, feels eerie, you kind of like get to like briefly understand everything that's happening while also like keeping you like engrossed in the movie's like atmosphere, which is really cool to me.
Yeah, I agree. I love that scene too. And it is, like I said earlier, it's very unique to this movie. That feeling that you're there, but it's not a real place. It's like it feels like a dream version of Christmas. You know, what you imagine Christmas to be when you're a kid. When you think back at Christmas, you think in these kinds of images, and it really, really does a good job. And that scene particularly feels that way. And I love the these kind of like analog versions of old Christmas carols playing on the radio as they travel. It really contributes to that scene. So next question, who's your MVP of the movie?
MVP, I would probably say as far as I'll say like really quickly that I thought it was odd that the like engineers that like drove the train like higher quality like were like had like more higher quality models than most of the other characters in the movie. Yeah. And they probably made me laugh the most with like how outlandish like once they speak and kind of like how unique they feel to this movie and and also kind of contributes to like the dream aspect because like it's kind of like if you didn't know much about like trains, like you might imagine like engineers to look like them.
Right.
And also, another MVP for me would, probably be the character that grew on me as he grew in the story was Billy and how he, he's definitely out of all the like other kids in the movie, he just feels like what like a kid would really do in the situation. And I feel like there's like some background with him that we might not know about that kind of leads him to like feel the way he does about Christmas and how it changes like slowly throughout the movie to show how he changes.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I agree about Billy. Billy, it's weird because he has probably the least screen time, but I think you learn a lot about him. And again, not through a lot of dialogue. He doesn't say all that much, but you could tell that he has some bad experiences. He has some emotional scars maybe about Christmas or something. He is very pessimistic. He's very withdrawn. He doesn't want to get on the train at first. The kids help him get on the train, he's not trusting when he finds the present, and because he doesn't think things, and he says this, he doesn't think things are going to work out for him. And the movie takes you on a journey with him because at the end, you really are rooting for Billy, and the fact that he's able to make some friends is something that is fulfilling about this movie. It is a good ending to his arc, and it does feel good, and it's a good takeaway for this movie.
Even through like all the dumb decisions that the main character could make throughout the movie, he like both him and like the girl will constantly like support Billy and try and help him like try and achieve like making some friends and finding like some like happiness like through the holidays, and it like it's very heartwarming and it like makes me happy.
Definitely. And again, they feel like kids, and the hero boy and the hero girl, they definitely take them under their wing, and they are friendly and encouraging in a way that I've seen kids are. And this is one of those great things about children. I think there is an optimism to the possibility. Like, why shouldn't this guy be our friend? Why shouldn't he come meet Santa and all this stuff? Why shouldn't we help them? And it's really good to see. It is heartwarming. It's a really, really nice story. Okay, so now it is time for the big question. were the events of this story a dream or did they really happen?
When I first thought about this question, the way I interpret it kind of comes to me as, from the end of the movie, we see that he actually receives the bell from Santa, which, like, on the surface level makes you believe that this actually happened. But I feel like it's more complicated than that, and that, like, looking at, like, things beyond, like, the surface kind of brings more context to what's actually happening here, which to me feels like this is a dream and maybe an exaggeration of, like, an event in the main character's life that actually happened, like, during, like, the holidays where he met some friends and, like, and like a social event and like convince like them of like the spirit of Christmas and all that other stuff. And as soon as we see him in his room, I can immediately tell I've had similar experiences to like the start, because like him like getting out of his bed and looking at stuff in his room that he wouldn't usually approach on other nights is definitely something I do when like I'm like up on Christmas Eve, and it feels like real, and that what happens next is most likely a dream, which I think it is. And is that Santa bell? And I think that bell that he got like received at the end was actually it's weird because I actually do not think it's from Santa, like the real Santa. And the reason like his parents still hear like a ring when they when they jingle it is because they've lost the Christmas spirit and that he still has it, which is presented in like a more like literal way in the movie. But like I think that it, like, if you look, like, under the surface, then I think what is really happening is that, like, it's just a metaphorical way of saying that he's gained the Christmas spirit once again.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's an interesting way of looking at it, because, as you mentioned, the ending of this movie is told from his perspective as an adult, because there's an epilogue where he talks about these events as being past, and that he's all grown up now. And what you said about he's looking back at one Christmas where he felt this way, and maybe his memory, he's just thinking about the events of that night in a more magical, more embellished way than what actually happened. Maybe that's true. Who knows? But I think the point, I think the point is that he has chosen to embrace the Christmas spirit. And because of that, he can hear the bell. And I buy that. I buy all that. You know, I think you can, you know, decide to make Christmas something special if you wanted to. There's a lot of movies and a lot of media, you know, that deals with this. I mean, the most famous one being Charlie Brown Christmas Special. Well, Charlie Brown is on a crisis about not knowing what Christmas is about, you know, and he kind of gets that spirit in that lesson during that show. And there are many ways to look at Christmas in a very cynical way and look at it as a corporate cash grab and a way of getting people to spend money, which I'm sure it is. But that's not what's important. What's important is that each person can make it something special for themselves if they choose to believe, if they choose to embrace the better parts of it. And I think that's what the main character does by choosing to embrace the spirit of being with friends, having this adventure, getting this gift from Santa, and remembering this fondly. I think it embodies the best spirit of Christmas. And for that reason, I think, yeah, it's all real. It's because it has that meaning.
And another quick note is that even though like Santa like will like really appear in this movie, I see this as like a memory of a previous Christmas for him where he might have believed that like a gift might have that was written as Santa might have actually been from Santa, and he remembers it in a way that makes it feel real, which is why like whole like dream sequence of this movie like leads you to the belief that it could have been real.
Yep, I agree, definitely. All right, so one more question. Would you ever make a remake, a reboot, or a sequel of this?
Well, throwaway like statement was recently made of a possible prequel to this movie where it was about like the hobo character in the movie.
Oh, okay.
That will be more of like a ghostly spirit throughout the movie that his like appearance like kind of like left up the question of like there. But you would assume that this movie would probably be explaining why he was the way he was in that movie. Which I would actually be pretty interested to see. That would be an interesting way to like tackle like a like follow up to this movie.
Yeah, that's not bad. You know, I never would have thought that I would have wanted a sequel or a prequel to this movie, but that's not a bad way to take it. Like, you know, there is a hobo character that you don't learn a lot about, but it seems like he was a passenger on the Polar Express in some Christmas past, and for whatever reason, his spirit lingered there. So yeah, I'm okay with that. I would watch a movie based on that. I want to add also that about 10 years ago, I would have said, give us a special edition with, you know, better animation, fix all these, you know, terrible faces. Now I say there's no need. I think the animation is actually aged pretty well, given the way animation has now can do truly more realistic looking stuff. And this stuff looks quaint now by comparison, and I'm quite okay with it.
And I'd say the hobo character, more than anything else in this movie, feels like he's, like, based off of, like, something that could be taken from other, like, things in Christmas media, especially, like, the story of, like, Ebenezer Scrooge, where he, like, basically has a bunch of spirits that tell him about, like, Christmas past, present, future, which he kind of, like, embodies in a way. And also, is kind of my theory about this is kind of tied to the fact that he like plays with like a puppet that is Ebenezer Scrooge in the movie.
That's interesting.
Where the main character runs into a like a train that's full of a bunch of abandoned like puppets and like other old toys.
That's interesting. I never thought of that, but that does make a certain amount of sense. Okay, it's time for our closing section. And the question here is, would you recommend this movie? And who is it for? And what conditions is it for? I'll start. I like this movie, but I think you need to be in the right mindset. There's not much of a story here. What is here is an atmosphere. It's a mood. It's the perfect movie to fall asleep to on a cold evening, maybe even on the week before Christmas or on Christmas Eve itself. I think it has that atmosphere. It puts you in that mindset of this is a magical evening. Anything is possible. And I think that's the perfect mindset to take into this movie. And that's when you would watch it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with a lot of the things like you said, and that a lot of the things about this movie are taken at a aesthetic value that like kind of you get from a lot of like media, but this movie in particular kind of captures it in a way that no other has, and that I feel I could definitely see a lot of people enjoying this movie because like there's a lot of people that will like watch movies for the sake of like kind of like feeling that they're actually there and experiencing the things that are happening.
All right. And with that, I think it's time for us to say goodbye. Good night, everyone, and have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All right, so that was our big comeback episode. Hopefully our next break won't be quite as long. Thank you all for listening. As always, take care, and we'll see you next time. At one time, most of my friends could hear the bell, but as years passed, it fell silent for all of them. Even Sarah found one Christmas that she could no longer hear its sweet sound. Though I have grown old, the bell still rings for me, as it does for all who truly believe. Merry Christmas, everyone, and have a good night.